Welcome to everybody. We're on week three of the foundation course. So is anyone here first time new tonight? Yep. Anybody else? Other people coming along the other few times? Kidoki. It's hard to tell, you know. So each of the classes in this course is on a particular topic. So the one today is about meditation, how to meditate, what it's about, what it's for. Many people, when you first kind of think about coming to a Buddhist center, many of the phone calls that we get is, oh, I want to learn to meditate. But of course, Buddhism is a lot more than meditation. Meditation also is a lot more than what we think it is. So I'm going to attempt to give you an overview in one short class, but at least the key elements. What we've already covered in this course is the main refuge of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Buddha, the teacher, the Dharma, the medicine for the mind, and the Sangha, who are our spiritual community, the monks and nuns, us here, our kind of Dharma buddies, spiritual peers, but also those who are living with the realizations in their mind, who've actually changed their minds. And so for tonight, what we're going to have a look at, I put this picture up because many times people will say, oh, are you going to meditation tonight? It's a really good Freudian slip because they actually do go together very, very well. And just like if we take medication every day, you know, it's about taking it every day. It's not taking the whole bottle all at once, is it? It's a consistent kind of practice. We internalize it, we get the benefit. And it's exactly the same with meditation. Something that we do every day, the consistency, constancy, we internalize all of the theory into our own experience. And that's how we change. That's how we actually become better from the disease of the disturbing emotions. So meditation in a way is like the ultimate cure. What we're doing is instead of working externally, physically on our environment, we're working on our mind, because who experiences happiness, unhappiness? It's us. So we start with ourselves, with our mind. So we're going to have a look what meditation's for, how it works, some handy hints for beginners just to get you started, and different types of meditation, and then what the formula is really for if you're going to have a daily meditation practice so that you get the most out of it. If we have all of the ingredients, then we're assured of the result. So I'm going to fess up right at the beginning and say, sometimes I've been on the wagon and had a nice daily meditation practice, even amongst the chaos of daily life. And then I've fallen off the wagon entirely for what I thought was a very short time. And it's actually been a couple of years that I've gone, oh, right, doesn't time fly? And I've clambered back on again, and it's quite difficult to start a practice up again. But it is possible. So I'm going to be able to share some handy hints that way as well. And I definitely notice the difference between if I do a daily reflection or if I don't. So what about here? Has anybody already got some form of daily meditation practice? A few? One, two? Bit? Half and half. Right. Excellent. Good, good, good. So let's start with our motivation. And as we go through tonight, we'll actually be able to see why it's so crucial to have a motivation. But as we've all just arrived, either just arrived online, got the screen set up, or just arrived here in the building from probably a busy day and dealing with traffic, adjusting our body and then adjusting our mind. So physically, let's get comfortable. So adjust your posture on the chair so that you feel stable, supported. Sitting fairly well back in the chair so that the lower back is supported, and possibly the top part of your spine is free, so you're not kind of slouching, putting just a little bit of effort into keeping your posture alert and straight. hands in the lap or on the knees, whatever's comfortable. Imagine a thread of light running from the base of your spine up through your body, inside your body, coming out the crown of your head, and feel as if you're being pulled up from your crown. And naturally, your spine will extend and become more straight. Pull your chin in, have your head just slightly tilted forward. Relax the jaw, put a slight smile on your lips. Release any tension from around the eyes, the frown lines, the temples. Just let your eyes be slightly open, or if you find that distracting, then just lightly closed. Take a couple of nice long deep breaths in and out, becoming present where you are, not needing to be anywhere else or do anything else. Anything really important that's playing on your mind, you can just leave at the door to pick up later. And just like all the rest of the world is going on around us, but we are sitting still, so too, rest your mind, your attention on the breath as you're breathing in and out. And even if other thoughts or distractions arise, just ignore them. Instead, keeping your focus, just feeling the breath enter and leave the nostrils, saying to yourself in and out as you're breathing. And it's okay if you get distracted, that's natural. But the thing is to notice as soon as possible and bring your focus back to the breath, gently breathing in and breathing out. And feel as if all the thoughts and feelings and memories begin to still, just like autumn leaves come to rest once all the wind has stopped. Enjoy being sitting still, being present, ready to engage in the class. And then from this state of relaxation and alertness, then we can adjust our motivation. Why are we here? What's our purpose? We have our immediate concerns, our personal ones. We have our concern and responsibility for all those around us, our family, our community. The state of the environment. And from a Buddhist point of view, a Mahayana point of view, What we do really matters. We have a responsibility for the welfare, not just of ourselves, but of others as well. And we have a potential to be able to help. So without putting any limit on our purpose, we can adjust our motivation to be the biggest purpose, the benefit of all living beings, ourselves and all others, an ultimate benefit, releasing everyone from suffering and bringing them to a state of ultimate lasting happiness. And we can set this as our motivation because it is possible to do this. We have this potential. So we can have the courage to adjust our motivation like this, and then we'll get everything else in between. So with this big-hearted attitude, then gently bring your focus back to the room. Open your eyes if they're closed. So let's have a look. What is meditation? And probably, so for those of you who already have some form of meditation practice, why do you meditate? What's your purpose, or what first drew you to it, or what's kept you going, being able to sustain a practice? Yeah. Calming the mind. Yep. Being able to focus, calm the mind. What else? Anybody else who already does a meditation practice of sorts? Concentration, perhaps. Manage anxiety. That's right. Yep. Yeah, so a lot of it is like that internal medication, isn't it? Yep. So actually, meditation, what we can think of as being caring for the mind. It's like our health regime or our fitness regime. So we usually start meditating because we have an immediate concern, but we can't just leave it at that because, as I've found, and you might find too, that once you actually get your anxiety out of, under control, you stop meditating. So it's a really limiting kind of thing. So it's good to have a very big, courageous motivation. The main thing is for caring for the mind. And it's just like if you have a car, you wash it, you keep it clean, you go and get it serviced. You don't leave it till it falls apart before trying to get it fixed. And we all know what happens if we do. You've got to put fuel in regularly, isn't it? It's not like you put fuel in once and that's it, I'm done. So what do? When we meditate, there's many different types of meditation. There's many meditations that we can learn. You might be tempted to think that you have to sit cross-legged and close your eyes and not have any thoughts. That's kind of like the popular thing. But actually, meditation is probably none of those things. Actually, what we're doing when we're meditating is familiarizing our mind with the causes of happiness, with the causes of a peaceful mind, of a content mind, undisturbed, clear. So one way that I got my head around this was to think, well, what do I normally familiarize my mind with? What are my current preoccupations? Not necessarily the causes of happiness. So a little something to read to you from The Perfect Mirror, Reflections on Truth and Illusion by the Australian monk Thupten Gyatso. So he said, "My nephew, a promising young footballer, once tried to impress his monk uncle by telling me that his team meditates before the game. 'Oh, excellent,' I replied. 'Upon what do you meditate?' 'On hatred,' he said, with enthusiasm." Well, just try them. So it probably worked, but perhaps this is not the most skillful application for the powers of meditation. The purpose of meditation in Buddhist practice is first to reduce the noise of uncontrolled thoughts and emotions in our mind, and then to turn our attention towards a fine analysis of how we exist. With the right instruction and sufficient effort, this can culminate in us directly realizing our ultimate nature. Such wisdom eliminates the self-grasping ignorance, the root of all of our suffering. A second function of meditation is to train our mind in positive attitudes, such as loving kindness. This may not win many football games, but it will make our lives a whole lot better. And it provides the support of self-confidence and happiness through which we'll be able to persevere and achieve that wisdom. We all want to be attractive and liked by others, so we spend time and money grooming and decorating our bodies to make them appear as beautiful as possible. But most of us simply do not have the genetic potential to even approach the physical prowess or bodily perfection of field, screen, or catwalk idols. On the other hand, every one of us has the mental potential to attain the exquisite inner beauty of patience, loving kindness, and wisdom. And these mental qualities are truly attractive. Even the most seriously physically challenged person brings warmth and joy to our hearts when their mind is radiating loving kindness. And the most handsome and athletic people become ugly when they're angry, disgusting when they're greedy, repulsive when they're arrogant, and terrifying when they preach distorted views such as racism. So if we want to be liked, we should spend more time on the meditation cushion and less time in front of the mirror. Meditation requires instruction and inspiration from an experienced person, a quiet and comfortable place, and more determination than an athlete intent on winning gold. But don't worry, that degree of enthusiasm will appear as you begin to taste the benefits of meditation. So what we're doing, familiarizing our mind with the causes of happiness, instead of just wanting happiness, practicing the causes of happiness. So happiness, peace, contentment is a result. The Tibetan word for meditation just means familiarization. And actually, I think the word for mindfulness just means remembering the object, remembering to bring our mind back to these causes of happiness. So what we're doing, we're retraining our mind, our habits, actually trying to discipline our mind and develop some concentration. And whilst we're doing that, we are rewiring our brain. So it has a physical result as well. How we do it, and we'll go into this in a little bit more depth, using analysis to change how we think about things. Because a lot of times, especially when we're distressed, we use what I'd call emotional thinking. So, you know, like the protests that just happened, you know, everyone's sick of COVID, sick of lockdowns, and so they just want to vent, go out and demonstrate. That's emotional thinking. It's not rational. It's not going to help. COVID doesn't care. And cause and effect will just play out. But nevertheless, there's something really powerful going on there. And what's powerful going on is emotions. So we've got to have a two-pronged approach. One is using analysis to change how we think. So actually using reasoning and logic to become rational again, because when we're upset, we're never rational. And then not just that, it's not just analysis, but we use imagery or experiences to change how we feel about things. So that's where all the visualization meditations and chanting and the experiences of imagining light flowing through you so that you actually feel different. It's not just an intellectual thing. So we're really retraining whole aspects of our being. And it has a flow-on effect. All this hard work pays off in daily life. It's transferable. What we do on the meditation cushion, all that effort will mean that the rest of the day will go by a lot better. But often when we first sit down, we just think, oh, I just want to calm down. So you calm on the meditation cushion, then you get up and have the rest of your day and you're all flustered again. But actually, from a Buddhist point of view, it's the other way around. The hard work happens in the meditation and then we enjoy the results. So if we just have Meditate just to relax, we're really selling ourselves short, because yes, we will relax, but it won't become a sustainable practice. And there's a couple of quotes. So one is, it's a little bit like if we're just meditating to just feel better in the moment kind of thing, it's like moving the furniture around while the house is burning down. You know, yeah, sure, you get a nicer configuration of sofa and whatever, but the main point is to really have a deep insight into the nature of our mind, our existence, what causes suffering, what causes happiness, and be able to do something about that. That's the house burning down. So in terms of, as a reflection, I've put up these little pictures and I'll explain why in a moment, but I would say, to give ourselves some encouragement, we do meditate already. We familiarize our mind already with a whole lot of things, but what do we familiarize our mind with? And usually what we're so familiar with is being lonely and alienated. We spend a lot of time ruminating like that. We spend time thinking about all the things that we want. So on a daydreaming level, that can be fun, but what happens is we start feeling more dissatisfied and then start planning how to get more of those things. So that's the big sale one. Or we spend a whole lot of time resenting daily life chores, not wanting to do things. Why do I have to do that? If we're worried about something, we'll have a crystal clear visualization of that, won't we? If we're worried about the state of the world, frightened what we're going to lose or what we've done wrong. So all of this, in a way, we can say this is what we normally meditate on, but it's actually not really meditation, because we're not determining and focusing our mind. Our mind is captured by these things. So meditation is about being able to place our mind on an object that we want to, in whatever way that we want, without stress, with a relaxed and alert mind. And so what we want to place our mind on isn't worries and revenge, but it's on the causes of happiness, the real internal causes of happiness, much more constructive things. So, for instance, instead of thinking about the big sales and what do I want, we could place our mind on rejoicing, being really happy of what we already have, happy that we have choices. Instead of resenting housework, there's all sorts of amazing thought transformation teachings. Say, like, if you're scrubbing gunk off the saucepan, you think, may I be able to scrub away all the suffering and all the causes of disease and suffering from my mind and the minds of others. So you may actually scrub better. And even when we feel alone and alienated, it's because our mind is looking at all of the things that we don't like about our situation, but we can also think of all the benefits of our situation. So there are benefits, but we have to turn our mind to those things. One of the simplest things that I heard about wasn't even a Buddhist one, but it was a company somewhere in England where when everyone shows up to work, the first 5 minutes, everyone's sitting at their desk, they have to write down all the good things about their fellow workers. 5 minutes, what your qualities are. And so what do you think happens? Everybody's really happy just from 5 minutes of focusing on the good qualities of the people you're spending time with. And it directs the whole day. So it's not like anybody even changed. What changed? Where we're directing our mind. Okay, so before we go on, questions, comments so far? clear as mud. So please wave your arm around when you have a question, because if you're like raising your eyebrow or something, I think you just got a little itch under the mask there. So let's have a look then at what meditation is. Three aspects of meditation, and only one of them is really the sitting down one. So the first aspect of meditation or familiarization is actual study or research, because we have to know what we're going to meditate on. So when I was living in Melbourne, I discovered that there was a meditation center just around the corner from me. I thought, oh, beauty. So me and my friend Pearly, off we went to meditation, and it was a big room, and kind of fluffed around fitting the cushion and la la la, getting all comfortable, right, ready. And so I kind of missed the beginning introduction of what the guy who was leading the meditation said. And then he didn't say anything else for the rest of the hour. I'm like, dang. Needless to say, I was very restless and fidgety. So we've got to know what we're going to meditate on before we sit down to meditate. And that means actually getting the meditation. So the meditations are like recipes. They have all the ingredients in there so that it turns out well. So even if we do a bit of a reflection ourselves, if we make it up as we go along, there's going to be insight there, but we may not come to a conclusion. We mightn't have all the bits, so then we don't have a strong result. So it's really good to actually have a set meditation to do. And then you do it, and then you know, you can check up, did I get the result or not? So depending what, if it's a meditation on the Buddha, then why meditate on the Buddha? What all the various characteristics of the Buddha mean? So that there's a real meaning in there. And then what's the process of the meditation? So we have to get all the material together and get a good meditation. There's many meditations on, ambition and how to, in the worldly life, how to make money, or, you know, all those pep talks. They're a meditation of sorts, and they have a result, but it's usually a very limited result. So what we want is this really big result, complete liberation from suffering and all of its causes. Then second part is contemplation. And for us beginners, it means actually discussing it, becoming familiar with the material and playing devil's advocate, asking questions. What if this and what if that? What about this situation? What about that situation? And like we were talking about last week, thinking not just the theory of the meditation, but how does that apply to me? So if we're doing a meditation on light coming from the Buddha and washing through us all of our negativities and problems, then think about some of those specific ones. Oh, frustration or pigheadedness or anxiety, and actually imagine all of the anxieties, lots of little black dots that are just being flushed out. So you make it personal. If it's a meditation on overcoming anger and developing patience, then taking an example from your life, not from history. So I found the best way to do this is actually something like journaling, writing it down, because we're not so good at sitting there going through a dialogue like that. I know at school I was never taught reasoning and logic and how to actually reason through things. So I've actually find it much easier to concentrate by writing it down or discussing, going and having coffee and actually discussing things like this with people. And then you get to sit down and do the meditation. So that's the familiarization. And that's where you have a very intensive meditation session where you go through all of those same points in a coherent order. And because you don't have any distractions around you, it goes in very deeply. It's a lot deeper than just having a chat with somebody. And because your mind is relaxed and alert, the wisdom of it goes in deeper and has a chance to change your mind. So the first one, the study, is like not not just our own opinion about stuff, but actually finding out what do the great masters say? What are those meditations, using the wisdom of practitioners that have had the results that we want. The contemplation is where we contemplate it. We become very, we go over it in all different ways. So instead of kind of just daydreaming, it's like a really creative, constructive daydream. And you let yourself be immersed in it. I kind of feel it's like splashing about in the topic. Did everyone love splashing around in gumboots as a kid? It's like that. You get into the topic and go, right, let's get into this. And then the familiarization, that's like rewiring the brain. You change your habits. You change your responses. All of the automatic responses that we normally do when we meet difficulties or difficult people and we react in our meditation, we react differently. We bring up our patience and our tolerance and our compassion. So if we've done the first two, then the actual sitting down and meditating doesn't have to be that long or that stressful. What it does is it really integrates everything, and it's quite powerful. If we just sit down and try and do all of that at once when we're sitting down meditating, we're just going to get distracted. Our knees are sore, and what am I meditating on again? And oh, this is all too hard, and we'll just get despondent. Questions, comments? Yes, so some things are easier to meditate on than others. Some are probably more pleasant to meditate on than others, but where we start actually is with our biggest problem, not with the easy one. We start with the thing that's going to be the most effective, the thing that we need the most. So it doesn't necessarily have to be hard and horrible. And I mean, luckily there's such a huge range that we'll know, and then if we, I'll go through them in a moment, but if we're consistent with it until we start seeing a result, just like if we change our diet or start taking vitamins. You know, I started taking iron after a while. It wasn't on the first day that I got the result of that. It was much later on, and I didn't even notice I had the result till I missed out a few days, and then I noticed, oh. So it's similar with meditation. It takes a while. So we'll go through in a moment what to meditate on. Just some handy hints getting started. So pretty quickly, when regularly, repetition is key. What makes it easier if you pick the same time each day, because it's much easier to develop a habit that way. And then the habit, the momentum will take you along. So some people are morning people, some people are evening people, depends on your family situation, depends if your mind is clear when you wake up or if it takes you hours and you're really groggy when you wake up. It all just depends. But a little bit every day, same time each day. It's no good just meditating, you know, for 2 hours every Sunday. And there is a handy hint of hitchhiking on an activity that you already do. So this is what I did. I absolutely, without fail, every day have a cup of coffee. So there's already a habit that I have. So now I do my speech blessing meditation when I have my cup of coffee. So then I don't miss my speech blessing, because I'll never miss my coffee. And I've got it all timed now that as I have sipping my coffee, same time every day, and then the part of the speech blessing where all of the mantras absorb into your tongue, that's and all of the light flows through your body, that's when the caffeine starts flowing through my body. So it's perfectly timed. So if you're walking, swimming, cup of coffee, whatever it is that you do, you can at least hitchhike some form of meditation onto that to get started. where, sit up a nice seat. So it doesn't have to be sitting cross-legged on the floor. If you are uncomfortable sitting cross-legged, then don't force yourself. Have somewhere really nice. Lama Yeshe said, if what it takes is having purple velvet and leopard skin, the thing is that when you walk past it, you want to go, oh, I can't wait to meditate. Instead of like, oh, I really should have done my meditation today. So you want to make it a nice place, something that you are attracted to. So for a while, I had a really nice spot in the garden, and the cats would play, and the little babbling brook sounded a fountain, and the little spot for my coffee cup. It's very easy to do a contemplation when it's nice like that. And then when you go and sit in that spot, your mind is already ready to focus. So there's minimal effort with trying to bring your mind back to what you're doing. It all flows into place. If you have family or kids or something like that, invest in a good do not disturb sign or the traffic light system. One of our friends has traffic lights. So if it's red, the kids know not to come in the room. And if it's orange, they can come in very quietly. If it's green, yep, run in. So probably we all need a little traffic light system. And really leave your phone outside the room. Don't put it by there, by the bed or by the seat. Put it outside of the room. Countless studies have shown that just knowing that it's in arm's length is distracting. And how long for? Short. Session lengths should be 10 to 30 minutes maximum. At least for the first year. And the length of the session should be that you end the meditation feeling that you could meditate for longer. So that way you can build up your strength. Whereas if you meditate and then you think, oh, my focus is really good today, I'll go another 10 minutes, another 20 minutes. And then when you get tired, then you stop. That's terrible associations, isn't it? So if you think, oh, I could have meditated for longer, then just meditate for longer the next day. Very slowly increase the length. And it's much better to, rather than increase the length of your meditation longer and longer and longer, to just get better at it, better quality. One of my favorite examples here, going to the gym. So one of the things, if we're unfit or if we're physically really out of shape or in pain, we often think that's the cause of our problems. That's the reason it's difficult to get through life. But actually, it's a result. Being unfit is a result, isn't it, of accumulated bad decisions and time running away and distraction, and then we get the result. Mental unhappiness too. It's not that our anxiety is causing us problems or our depression is causing us problems. Actually, anxiety and depression are a result. They're a result of unskillful activities in our mind, unskillful habits. So what we need is a regime to change that, which is becoming familiar with the causes of happiness. Then we get a good result. Physical fitness, mental fitness. So I find this is quite different in our Western approach. What we normally think of as the reason why we're having a hard time isn't. It's the result of a whole lot of other things. And that's really where meditation comes in, of caring for our mind. So who here goes to the gym or has ever gone to the gym? Hands up. Oh, huge amount of you. Okay. And out of you who do go to the gym, who here has ever stopped going to the gym? Hands up. Oh. And so why did you stop? Why did you stop? It got boring. What else? Why did you stop?
Time restrictions.
Lost motivation. Yeah, that's right. So
negative associations.
negative associations. Yeah, that's all the unintended associations and things. Yes. So generally why we forget is we forget the goal, isn't it? And normally the goal has been quite a short-term one, so it doesn't sustain us. Whereas if say we're going to the gym and we're thinking, okay, I'm going to go and climb a big mountain in 2 years' time, then we have a longer goal than just going to the gym for a few weeks and then trailing off. So when we forget our goal, it's because we've got right into focusing on all the challenges and the difficulties of trying to get fit, and we forget why. But nevertheless, people do continuously try and go to the gym. So there's all sorts of reasons for that. One of them, of course, is exercising in a group so much easier than exercising at home. Like, how many exercise machines are just gathering dust under people's beds? There's that old joke, isn't it, of when the council comes round for the pickup, it's all the exercise bikes. So same with meditation. It's much easier to meditate in a group. Your focus and concentration comes much easier. What happens if you go to the gym and you just go straight to lifting weights without a warm-up? Injury, that's right. Are you likely to go back and do it again? No. So same thing with meditation. It's not just like sit down, right, I'm gonna meditate. We need to have a warm-up. We need to have a purpose, a big goal, ease into it, have a nice regime. What about if we just go to the gym for 3 hours once a fortnight? We can see how ridiculous it is, isn't it? And yet, I mean, that's pretty much how a lot of us do it. We get all enthused every few months and go, right, I'm going, and then hurt, and then that's it, not going again. The other thing too, if we do have a good fitness regime, if we have all of the parts come together, then we're not just fit in the gym, are we? It means that the rest of our life, we're strong, we're healthy. Okay, so meditation, how to either structure a meditation session or how to structure your day, same. So we have the motivation in the beginning. We have a beginning, we have a middle, and we have an end. So the beginning, always we have to set a motivation. What's our purpose? Because if we don't set a strong motivation, we'll just forget, we'll fall off the wagon. The middle, the actual practice, that's like the jewels, all the wonderful, beautiful meditations that we can do, that we familiarize ourselves. Those jewels, they're like the causes of happiness. It's a new things that we familiarize our mind with. And this is why I put such a dinky picture up there of a train, because this is literally what we're doing, retraining our mind. And then at the end, the little caboose at the end, to make sure nothing falls off the back, nothing is lost. The meditation is sealed and strong. And the little caboose at the back talks to the driver at the front. They communicate with each other. So our dedication mirrors the motivation. So this is like the ingredients. We have to have all three. If we sit down and we just start doing whatever meditation practice and we've forgotten the motivation, it won't be strong. If we do the meditation, we forget to dedicate at the end, we can have a really nice meditation. We get up and the next thing we know, we've had an argument with our family and we've lost all of that good feeling and all of that effort. But if we've dedicated, it cannot be lost. And those three things are, they can actually be the same length. You can have 5 minutes for the motivation, 5 minutes for the actual practice, 5 minutes for dedication. Sometimes when Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who's depicted on the throne here, would give a teaching, he'd spend maybe 1-3 hours on the motivation. And everyone's like, come on, when are we getting to the topic? But it's kind of like the motivation is the topic. So for a while, His Holiness the Dalai Lama had said to Rinpoche, you can't teach after midnight. You know, you've got to stop by midnight. So there was one a Buddhist initiation that Rinpoche gave in Melbourne that I went to. And everybody showed up from all over the place. It started at 8 o'clock. And so Rinpoche is teaching. And people are beginning to fall asleep and whatever. And at 9:45, Rinpoche went, oh, okay, we better do the initiation. And he did it in 7 minutes. And then the dedications. So why we're doing things is really important. Geshe Jamyang's often said the motivation, it's like the long jump. If we're doing a long jump, don't know if they've done the long jump in the Olympics yet, but everything depends on the run-up. Once you are in the air, there's very little you can do. Everything depends on the run-up. And it's the same with our day. It's the same with our life. It's the same with our meditation. Everything depends on the run-up. That's actually what directs the day. So we need a really clear goal. And what I found is very nice about Buddhist meditation is they say, adjust your meditation, your motivation. So it doesn't mean that you already have to have a pure, perfect, altruistic motivation. You can sit down and just go, I'm over this anxiety thing. That's enough to get you to the cushion. And then you adjust your motivation. So the momentum of wanting to be free of our current problems, then we've got to use our intellectual understanding to go, I've got to become free, not just of this problem, but the causes of it. All the disturbing emotions and the fears and hopes and anxieties and confusions that caused it. And not just that, I've got to actually remove all the causes of suffering if I don't want to suffer anymore. So I'm going for nirvana, liberation. That's why I'm doing this meditation. And then you can even go further and go, well, it's not just enough for me. What about everybody else? So there's a huge incentive then, because we may not bother for ourselves, but when there's children dying and the earth being, you know, destroyed and the climate and the whatever, then there's a huge incentive. Doesn't matter about my slightly sore knee or whatever it is, I'm going to do this. So we adjust our motivation. One way we can do it is by just asking why three times. So often we sit down, we go, I'm sick of this particular problem. That's the first why. So the second why do you want to even fix that problem? You know, who for? So you get a bit deeper and then you ask why a third time. And then that usually incorporates others. It's a very nice way of personalizing, kind of bridging between this, the big altruistic purpose and our current situation. Have the courage to be altruistic. So many times people will sit and go, oh, I'm just going to do this meditation because I don't want to suffer too much. Now, do we want to suffer a little bit? Is that our motivation? No, we don't want to suffer at all. So let's remove all the causes of suffering. We can be courageous because it is possible to do this. It's not just some fantasy. It is possible to remove suffering and all of its causes. And the two purposes, for oneself and for others. So we can spend a long time just splashing about in this topic of why. So it becomes really powerful. So here's a great motivation that's in your notes and one that's all-purpose, fantastic, from Lama Yeshe. What is the purpose of being alive today? It must be something more important than drinking coffee. Today I will develop bodhicitta, leading to the peaceful path of liberation and full awakening for the benefit of all beings. From this moment on, until I go to sleep, I shall stay aware of every action of my body, speech, and mind. Wherever possible, I shall try to help, and at the very least, I will not harm. It's a pretty all-encompassing morning motivation. If we had that on a little cue card or had it on your phone and it flashed up when your alarm went off, it's a really nice all-purpose one. When we set our motivation, it means that it automatically directs our whole day. That way we don't have to keep on reminding ourselves, oh, what am I doing again? We're already got the momentum pushing us in the right direction. So it means we have a lot more energy freed up. Okay, so questions about this at all, the motivation part? Makes sense? You could probably, you know, take something like that and tailor it to your own life, put in your own little bits and pieces. Yeah. Yes, it should be in the notes if you got the notes online, or there's also some hard copies in reception. Yeah. So if you don't, if reception's not open, then come see me after the class. Yeah. Okay, so then choosing the practice. So Jinx, this is the one for you. So what are we going to meditate on? For the analytical meditations in particular, the mind training ones, start with our biggest negativity. So the thing that gives us the most problems, that you know, brings way too much complications to our life. And if we don't know what our biggest negativity is, we just ask our friends. They'll tell us. You know, they might say, oh, you've got a really good heart, but, you know, you've got a sharp tongue, or you're a bit selfish, or, you know, you're a bit lazy, or whatever it is. They'll let you know in the kindest way possible. So, but we'll also know what it is that distresses us the most. So, for instance, in the Lam Rim, and this, what we're going through, our Lam Rim topics in this course, there is a whole section where you can look up all the various disturbing emotions. Like, say, for instance, if we have a problem with anger or hatred, so that whole spectrum from hatred at one end to just short-temperedness, there are meditations to develop our patience. So patience is having a mind at ease in a difficult situation. So patience isn't just squeezing your mind and not retaliating. It's actually be able to keep your mind at ease in the face of difficulties, without losing courage and without losing your cool. And there are meditations to develop that. And so we can do those meditations and get the result. If desire, lust, dissatisfaction is your biggest preoccupation, all the meditations to do with meditating on impermanence, change, the inevitability of our own death. What matters at death time is quite different from what my preoccupations are today. If jealousy or envy is really what's eating us up, there are meditations on rejoicing, how to feel happy for the fortune of others. That actually it's a way of generating happiness in your own mind, rejoicing for others. With depression, there are the contemplations on our fortunate human life, how to actually identify how fortunate we are, so we start genuinely feeling so lucky. And then there are all the visualization meditations on the Buddha that transform our image of who we are, that limited image that we have. We can also have a regime of going through one Lam Rim topic a month, and so within a year you would have done all the from here to enlightenment, all the topics on the path, and each year you go through those same topics, becoming more familiar and integrating them into your life. Always include a simple breathing practice at the beginning to settle body and mind. There are the visualizations, remember, that change how we feel about things, not just our understanding. They also work on our nervous system. And the meditations on what are called the four immeasurable attitudes. So we actually have a course coming up on Tuesday nights that are going to be going into each of these four. And so I'll put these up because they are a universal meditation. You don't have to be Buddhist. You don't even have to be religious to recognize these are four key attitudes. They're the make or break of happiness for ourselves and others. So if everyone just, if we had ads, billboards like this up that you read while you're at the lights on the way to work, you know, the whole world would be a different place. So the four immeasurable attitudes: may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that has no suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment to friends or hatred for enemies. So these four immeasurable attitudes are the main purpose and meditation for all Buddhist practices. We never leave them out. The first one, wishing all beings without missing anybody out to have happiness and its causes, that's like developing affection. And it's a beautiful meditation to work on because you yourself feel happy. So, you know, Jinx, if you're feeling kind of a bit overwhelmed by the world or a bit depressed or low, a meditation like this is uplifting. And it opens your heart and it means all your relationships become better and you're more tolerant of destructive people, all sorts of things like that. So just genuine affection. The second one, may all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering, is developing a big-hearted concern for others. And I mean, what is key here too, it's not just may they be free of suffering. Everybody wishes to be free of suffering, but very rarely do we wish to be free of the causes of suffering. That's something we haven't done before. So in that, not only are we developing our compassion and our concern, but we're also meditating to a large degree on, well, what causes suffering? May all sentient beings never be separated from happiness that has no suffering. So that's like the kind of happiness that comes from within, that's not circumstantial. The happiness that comes from our mind that doesn't depend on others being nice to us or the world working out or the weather being the right temperature. It's also a meditation on empathic joy, joyousness. Feeling really happy when others have happiness and mirroring that in our heart. And the last one, equanimity. Well, none of us want to go up and down like a yo-yo. It's exhausting. And what makes us go up and down a yo-yo is this kind of bias or partisanship, where we just care about the people we like, me, mine, my family. You know, it's like with COVID, we just want Australia to be safe, and who cares about those other poor countries? Everyone for themselves. So that kind of partisanship or bias backfires on us in the long term and short term. So in the long term, of course, if we're just working for our own happiness and not everybody else's, those everybody else are going to come and get us one day. But also just psychologically, if we forget to care about others, if we only care about those people that are nice to us, then our love becomes transactional and very fickle. So actually, we want to be able to have a genuine care for everybody regardless of how they treat us. Why? Because everybody matters, whether I like them or not. It's like Black Lives Matter, you know, everybody matters, regardless of our relationship, because everybody has feelings. So if we develop this kind of equanimity, then our mind stops going up and down like a yo-yo. We have less conflict, we're less fearful. How we feel about others isn't dependent on how they treat us, but by actually recognizing a fellow living being. So last couple of weeks ago, when we talked about what a Buddhist is, a Buddhist is an inner being, someone who looks within rather than externally for things or situations. So in a way, with these four immeasurables, and particularly with equanimity, what we're becoming is an inner professional. Yeah, because we all have an idea of professionalism, don't we? We expect all of our teachers and police and doctors and nurses to treat everybody equally. And if they don't, we get very upset and think they should know better. But this is what we can be like for all living beings. We can be an inner professional and treat everybody professionally with professional care and affection, regardless of how our own emotional state is going. And that'll have an amazing effect on us and on others. Living beings, sentient beings, so beings with consciousness. Yes, bugs and animals and birds and little tube worms at the bottom of the ocean, human beings. So there is a, broadly we can say there's a distinction between living things and living beings. So like a tree is a living thing, but a tree doesn't have consciousness. It responds, but it doesn't have consciousness. Whereas beings have consciousness, feelings. So even the tiniest little ant has feelings. You know, you put your finger down, they run away. They don't want to suffer. And just recently, which country was it that made it not illegal, but recognized that if you boil lobsters, that you're creating harm, that is animal cruelty. So it's Britain, wasn't it? Yeah, it was just recently in the news, because all of the ways just how the law recognizes sentience or beings is very similar to Buddhism in this way. You know, how you actually work out, it's not just an inanimate object that is responding to heat, but with these lobsters, they learnt to avoid the source of pain. And they also got a whole lot more sociable when they gave them ecstasy. Like the experiments that they did with these lobsters were quite something. So the result of it was, just because we can't hear them screaming doesn't mean that they're not suffering. It's very clear that they were suffering. So yes, all living beings, without missing out anybody. And as we know, even just externally, ecologically, we have to look after all the species on the planet. If we disturb that equilibrium, there's real problems for everybody. So we have these four immeasurable attitudes to continuously develop and deepen in our heart. And whether we're religious or not, they can only make a better world and a happier human being. And how we do it is incorporating these two types of meditation, or two methods to meditate. And you might have heard some of these terms: analytical or vipassana, and placement or shamatha. And they're two different ways of meditating to bring all of the different kind of characteristics of our mind together. So the analytical one is like an intensive study session. So if we're meditating on those four immeasurable thoughts, those attitudes, we're thinking about all of the examples, all the stories that we've heard. We're illustrating it. We've got these stories in our mind. We're using our reasoning and logic and go, even though I hate that person, you know, emotional reasoning happening there, logical reasoning says, if I go and punch them in the nose, there's going to be bad consequences. So we use all of that to retrain our mind. We go through all the different points. And in the Buddhist meditations, the points are laid out for us so we don't miss any, especially the ones like for developing equanimity or patience, which are very tricky to develop. There are each of the points to go through. It's a little bit like showing the workings in maths. Like, I loved maths when I was at school, and I loved going through just how predictable it was. And you showed, you did this bit, and then ching, at the end, the answer. And you could trace it all the way back. Analytical meditation also incorporates visualization. So we might think that that's an analytical thing, but what we're doing when we're imagining the Buddha, we're doing a meditation, the Buddha, there a rising golden light in front of us, and we're focusing on each of the different aspects and qualities. How the Buddha's body isn't like a statue here, but is made of light particles, radiant. How the Buddha's smile is looking directly at you and simultaneously all the other living beings. The robes of the Buddha represent the three higher trainings that, you know, protect the mind. So as you're going through all of these different aspects of enjoying the visualization of the Buddha and thinking of the meanings, that's an analytical meditation because you're going through the points. And then when you've got the whole image there and it's clear and strong, then you do the placement meditation. You rest in that. You rest your mind in it instead of immediately jumping off to the next thing. So one is you go through and you build it all up, and then you get to the aha moment, and then you still the mind. You hold your mind gently, firmly on that feeling or that topic or that conclusion. For as long as you can, it might just be a few seconds to start with. Then it might be 30 seconds, a whole minute. If you're meditating on the four immeasurable thoughts, for instance, and you go through them and you really start, say, thinking about equanimity and how important it is of being an interprofessional, and you get that idea, yes, I get it, then you have to stay still. So that's quite different from if you're having a coffee shop conversation, you're going, oh yeah, what about this and what about that? And you all go, yeah. And then the next person goes, and what about this? And off you are again. So if you do that, there's no way to stabilize your realizations. So what I found after many years of incredible coffee table conversations, coffee shop conversations, was that I would get to a conclusion and I'd have that aha moment, but I wouldn't stick with it. And then maybe a year later, I'd have the exact same conversation and I'd get to the same conclusion and I'd get the aha and I'd go, but I knew that and I forgot. So why do we forget? Why do we forget our realizations, our wisdom? Because we don't stick at it with that aha moment and really keep our mind still. There, held. So resting in the conclusion, stabilizing our realizations and being able to still the mind. So it's not easy to still our mind, as we know, because it's, you know, that probably even as we sat down tonight, whose mind was nice and still? Whose mind was jumping all around the place? Kind of natural, isn't it? So these two, they work in tandem together. So Kathleen McDonald in this book, How to Meditate, says the two kinds of meditation, analytical and placement, are used together, for instance, in visualization techniques, but it can also be in meditating on the Four Immeasurables. We need analytical thought to construct the image at the beginning of the meditation and to recall it whenever it's lost during the session. Analysis is also used to deal with other problems that might occur, such as distraction or negative thoughts. But developing a clear visualization depends primarily on placement meditation. Once the image has been established and we feel comfortable with it, we should hold it with single-pointed attention, not letting our mind be distracted by other objects. Initially, our concentration will only last a few seconds, but with continual practice, we'll be able to maintain it for increasingly longer periods of time. Every time our attention wanders or we lose the object, we should bring it to mind. This way of meditating both increases our familiarity with the positive images or topics and strengthens our ability to control and concentrate the mind. So there is a lot more in these two types of meditation. These combining these two types can lead us all the way to liberation and enlightenment. So, you know, as beginners, we just get started with this to be aware of these two aspects and to not rush through them. But they can become very profound, the way that we can really start analyzing what is our nature, what's the nature of our mind and our existence. And to be able to do that, we really need to be able to focus our mind without it being attention captured by other things, and without us forcing ourselves, because forcing, as we know with a fitness regime, it's not sustainable. All right, and then at the end, dedication, making your investment. So we all like to invest, isn't it? We don't want to just see everything kind of trickle away. So our dedication at the end of sitting and meditating, it mirrors the motivation. And it's very helpful, because if we've had quite a challenging meditation or a challenging time, we get overwhelmed by difficulties, we kind of got to say to ourselves, why am I even doing this again? Many times this is what happens, isn't it? We do something, we get really involved, we go, remind me why we're doing this. So that's the point, especially if we're working really hard, to remember, oh yeah, that's right, why am I doing this? To remove suffering and all of its causes, for myself and for others, to tame my mind. This is possible. The Buddha did it. The Buddha was a human being just like me. There's no difference between the nature of the Buddha's mind and the nature of my mind. I can do it too. Ah, yeah, that's right. So then the difficulties kind of fall away, and it's mirrored that motivation. Also, what it does is stabilizes our energy, so it's not lost, so it doesn't, we don't get despondent and fall off the wagon. In fact, it reinvests or refocuses our energy so that our energy can grow. And many people who have dedicated their lives for to others, for really, you know, big things, whether they're overseas building schools and hospitals or whatever it is, every night this is what they remember, what they're doing. They refocus their energy so that the next morning you wake up enthused again instead of despondent. It's very easy to get despondent because we just focus on the difficulties. It's also like pushing save on the computer. Well, now we have autosave. So what we're going to do is have autosave in our mind, isn't it? But how many times have I been working on something and then lost the document? So we can do that. We can forget to dedicate, then we lose the energy. So here is a nice dedication, an all-purpose one. Due to all the merits of the three times, so past, present, future, accumulated by me and by others, by everybody else, merely by seeing, hearing, remembering, touching, or talking to me, may any being be freed in that very second from all their sufferings, diseases, spirit harms, negative karmas, and obscurations, and abide in the peerless happiness of full enlightenment forever. So if you have a dedication like this, just by existing, you can benefit others. Just by someone honking their horn at you in traffic, you can benefit them if you have this dedication. It's so powerful. If you cook dinner for somebody, instead of just having the benefit just be for that dinner and then a few hours later it's in the toilet, if you do this dedication just merely by seeing, hearing, remembering, touching, or talking to me, or eating this food, or thinking about the dinner, or talking about the dinner, may they be free of all their anxiety, their depression, their sufferings, their illnesses, their negative karmas, their confusion, obscurations, and abide in the peerless happiness of full enlightenment forever enjoy your spaghetti. Then actually that spaghetti, cooking that spaghetti becomes a cause for enlightenment. Yeah, so this is a good question. And actually we talked about this a little bit last week with belief, that in Buddhism, belief comes from understanding. So it's not about wishing something or hoping something, but it's knowing, yep, this is possible. So it's more a sense of conviction, like we have in maths and science, medicine, that kind of thing. So for us beginners, that comes over time and researching and really starting to find out the nature of the Buddha, the Buddha's teachings, what's possible, and the nature of our mind. And then it starts becoming clear. But as a nice prayer, as something to hope for, it's going to help our mind, whichever way we look at it. And so before I came to Lumbri Tumpa Centre, I made costumes for street performers and circuses. And one of the very first costumes that I made, that when I got started, was Expo 88. And I made costumes for this group called Mozart Madness. And so there were four musicians that just went around and played Mozart and cracked jokes. They were fantastic roaming musicians. So inside all of their costumes, I sewed this dedication in between the costume and the lining. And you know, Mozart coats, they have many, many buttonholes. You know, the coat and the waistcoat, I mean, it just goes on forever. 30, 40, 50 buttonholes. So as I was making all those buttonholes, I was doing this dedication. And so for me, I was really happy about it. It's like stealth Dharma, you know, none of them knew. But I am convinced that it had an effect on people, that when people enjoy that music, that entertainment, that it has an effect on their mind. It had an effect on the performers. It had an effect definitely on my mind. And so now, well, I don't make costumes anymore, but I make crochet. So when I have my crochet, you know, I put the shawl on, and when I'm doing all the crochet, then I'm dedicating, may whoever, you know, gets this, enjoy the protection of the Dharma, the warmth of the Dharma, be protected from suffering. And you know, may we shoulder the mantle of responsibility for others, of looking after the world, after sentient beings, you know, the Mahayana altruistic motivation. And both of these things we're shouldering, you know, one supports the other. And may it be beautiful. So, you know, and everyone who sees or touches or thinks about crochet, or how do they do that, or like, oh wow, too much crochet in the world, whatever it is, may they be freed of all their sufferings and so on. So it's a very nice dedication that you can do for anything that you love doing, to make it part of the path to enlightenment, as well as the end of your meditation. Okay, so we've done, that's the beginning, the middle, the end. Well and truly established, whether it's a really short meditation, whether it's just a meditation whilst having coffee, whether it's a sitting half an hour meditation session. Then just some really quick handy hints as we get started. So this little picture, he's picked up a box, a removalist box. It says this way up, and the arrow is pointing down. So, you know, when we've got our meditation in the book, in this book, How to Meditate, it's a fantastic amount of meditations in there. Some Buddhist meditations, some kind of secular ones, breathing meditations or body of light. It's a really nice mix. It's a very good meditation manual. Follow the instructions. Like, do all of the instructions that it says, and then you're going to be assured of the result. It's a little bit like chemistry, you know. If you got your chemistry set and you go, oh, what happens if I put this in and this in with it? You could blow up the kitchen. this is important, especially if you do things like Vipassana retreats and things like that, where there's really intensive concentration and focus. If you don't get all of the instructions for that and just think, oh, I'm just gonna do my own thing, you can end up actually with a bad result. So we had one young man years ago who went and did a Vipassana retreat, didn't listen to the instructions, and just started focusing on particular sensations in his body without any motivation, without checking in with anybody, without analysis. And he actually, within 10 days, had a psychotic episode and brought on schizophrenia. He came back to Lungri Tumpa Centre and started doing really strange things at Lungri Tumpa Centre, and we kind of asked him, what have you been doing? And he's like, oh, I've been at this Vipassana retreat and I just got right into it. And then we asked a little bit more. It's like, didn't follow the instructions, so didn't get the result. So how we focus our mind can be very powerful, and especially if we're driven by trauma or we just think we know what we're doing but we haven't actually done our research, and then our mind starts becoming habituated, it may not turn out well. So that's why we need those ingredients. Be kind when training your mind, just like if you're training a puppy. What happens if you yell and scream at a puppy? Just goes away and wheezes, doesn't it? It doesn't. It's not happy. It won't love you. So a puppy needs discipline, exercise, kindness. Same with our mind. And training a puppy, it takes a lot, doesn't it? There's a lot of repetition and a lot of patience. And the only way you can do it is because you think, oh, the puppy's so gorgeous. So that's what we're going to think about our mind. Don't get mean. The meditations and the prayers, and so the prayers say, for instance, like the Four Immeasurable Attitudes, but also some of the other prayers, what they are is like a beautiful poetic way of putting together all the ingredients, having an altruistic motivation, what we're striving towards, what we want to get rid of, why we're doing it, who we're doing it for, all of it's together. So the prayers have a lot in there. You can think of them like a recipe for happiness. But if you're not Buddhist, if you're not interested in being Buddhist, you just want to, you know, work on your mind, then you can also find beautiful poetry. Some of the Sufi poetry is amazing, you know, something that is going to inspire your mind, or you can incorporate all of it together. So you start with, if you love poetry and if you love Sufi poetry, put that in, and then put in some of the Buddhist prayers so that you have all the ingredients and all of the feeling. And then you start your meditation practice, and it's a bit, you know, bumpy to start with, and then you have a few really good meditations, and then you just want to share. So actually the next one is keep it under your hat and be mindful who you talk to about your meditation practice. So there's a couple of reasons for that. One of them is that just like when someone starts telling you about, I had this amazing dream last night, and everyone else just rolls their eyes, or it's used to be, oh, I had this amazing drug trip, and everyone's just like, yeah, whatever. So the same thing, no one really wants to hear about our meditation practice. But more importantly, who you talk to, you want to be able to share your practice with fellow spiritual peers, or your teachers. But if it's someone who just thinks it's stupid, or has their own ideas, then you can really muddy the waters. And also, there's nothing like success to encourage jealousy. And unfortunately, what can happen is if you start having success with your mind and it looks like your life is turning out better, despite themselves, sometimes people have a real jealous response and get incredibly resentful and upset. It won't bring out the best in them, it'll bring out the worst in them. So this can especially happen with a spiritual practice, that people get very affronted by your own spiritual practice or your own virtue. And they have a how very dare you kind of response. Because if in our life we're feeling already resentful, a bit of self-loathing or a bit of pride or all of these things, we're under the hammer. And then someone else acts really virtuous, we perceive it like a personal affront. It happens again and again. It's like they say, no good deed goes unpunished. So this is why this jealousy will arise in the face of success, and it will happen too with your own spiritual success. So be careful who you share it with. Someone might, they themselves may be shocked at their own response, but they may try and undermine you. What are you doing that for? You know, what's the point? It's, you know, everyone's going to look after themselves anyway. All of those things come out. And as a beginner, we're quite vulnerable, and it will take the wind out of our sails. It's very easy for us to get demoralized. So pick who you talk to. It is nice to talk to people about your practice, but just kind of have some wisdom of who you choose to share it with. And the last thing, how you feel about your meditation practice will fluctuate. It's tidal. It'll be really strong for a while, and then it'll be really weak for a while. It'll go up and down, and that's natural. So the thing is to just keep on meditating anyway. So feeling really great today, great, excellent, just let's meditate. Feeling really down and foggy today, doesn't matter, let's meditate. Feeling all agitated, doesn't matter, let's meditate. Oh, that was a terrible meditation session, doesn't matter. Just keep on going. And what will happen is over time, you'll have an experience of that equilibrium, that constancy, in amongst the ups and downs of life. Also, a challenging, difficult meditation session where your mind is all scattered. I remember someone saying, yeah, I had a terrible meditation session. My mind kept on going over to this, and I'd have to bring it back, and over to that, and I'd have to bring it back, and this distraction and that. And I spent the whole time trying to bring my mind back to the breath. So actually, that's a successful meditation, because that's what we're trying to do. Distractions are natural. What we're trying to do is bring the mind back. So if you have this epic battle the whole time to try and bring your mind back, it wasn't pleasant, but that's an excellent meditation session. So, you know, how we feel about it is quite different from how we're actually progressing. And in my experience, you know, I've had some epic battles with sleep, for instance, being drowsy at teachings or meditation. And so much so that I've done that whole thing, you know, where you're like, you're almost delirious, you're rocking backwards and forwards, and everyone behind you is going, just stay still. And it's just torture trying to stay awake then. But I remember in one teaching with Lama Zopa Mishe that was very, very, very long, and I was just determined I'm not going to fall asleep no matter what. And like pretty soon into the teaching, I gave up even trying to understand what he was talking about. It was just this massive battle in my mind to stay awake. And I don't even remember when the teaching ended, you know, but it was definitely past midnight. But I've never had sleepiness like that since, because I was just determined I'm not going to give in. So I lost the battle, but I won the war for sure. So now at teachings, I'll have a little bit of sleepiness will kind of waft in, and I won't let it get me. And then I think I said to you, Bruce, years ago, it's like you go to a lower gear. So you have the sleepiness, but your mind, you go into a deeper gear, a lower gear, stronger gear, and then you can keep on concentrating, and then it's no problem. So it's definitely worth it. So how you feel about a meditation session goes up and down quite a lot, not to worry. So there's quite a lot to take away with today. Those of you with the notes, at least you've got those three nice kind of sayings to structure your practice around. settle the body and the mind beforehand. Short breathing meditation to start with. Then your beginning, middle, end. I would say try and do the meditation in the morning before you go out into the world. So meditation, caring for the mind, re-educating ourselves, familiarizing our mind with the causes of happiness, because we're already familiar with all the other causes for suffering and distress. Repetition is the key to success. Don't worry about the ups and downs. It's kind of like using the power of advertising, isn't it? Doesn't matter whether it's an ad that they've spent thousands of dollars on or if it's one of those cheap midnight ads. It's the repetition. Motivate, meditate, dedicate. That's the recipe. And it can be formal sitting practice, but also informally as you wake up in the morning. Why am I alive? What is the purpose of my life? At the very least, it's to not harm and whenever possible to help. And then get out of bed. So any last questions or comments before we do our dedication? Anything at all? Yeah. Record your thinking. Yes. So that would, writing things down would be in that second level of the contemplation. So first is the research. Then there's contemplating dialogue, journaling, flowchart, posing questions, Socratic analysis, all of those things. And you might be sitting meditating, but you might be at the kitchen table having breakfast and doing that. And then you do the formal sitting meditation where you go through those points. No, you'd have a reference, and that comes from the meditations in the Lam Rim. And the reference is that recipe because, for instance, developing compassion and not getting sidetracked by just getting really upset, overwhelmed with empathy, you need to have all the ingredients to have it develop into compassion. So for that, we need to have the set meditation. But the part beforehand of going through the flowchart in your mind and writing little stories and analysing, you know, what happened in the past, all of those things, then it gets focused and we can use it. And then it really helps to integrate it. We definitely need the formula for the set meditation because we haven't... So far, we haven't been able to figure out ourselves, have we? We've done our best, but we don't have all the ingredients, so it doesn't turn out the way that we hope. So the Buddhist meditations, if you want to become a Buddha, there's the ingredients, all the method and how to do it. The result, enlightenment, freedom, enlightenment. Yeah. Did you have a question too or someone else? Nope. Okie dokie. So let's dedicate and then I'll show you what we'll do for next week. Okay, so nice deep breath. Let everything settle what we talked about tonight. And we can remember our purpose, why we came along to class, why we came here tonight, bring that to mind. Also remember that our purpose, we've adjusted to become vast, profound, including everybody, including the biggest benefit, the most long-term benefit. So we can dedicate that everything that we've heard, thought about, questioned, were inspired by, all of these words are like drops of light, like a gentle rainfall of light, illuminating your mind, absorbing into you. All of these drops of light absorbed into you, the realizations, the wisdom that you can come back to whenever you need, that continuously illuminate your mind, that can bring about all the best possible results, complete freedom from suffering and all of its causes. And by familiarizing our mind with happiness and its causes, we can bring about the ultimate result, enlightenment for oneself, for the benefit of all, to be able to release all beings from suffering and bring them to lasting happiness. So now that we've dedicated, we can think we've sealed all the merits. They cannot be lost. Remembering that it's a dependent arising, ourselves, the meditation, the sentient beings, everything that we do in our mind, all comes together, is all the dependent arising, and we can get the result. So during the week, try and set aside a time for reflection each day. Try and make it the same time, make it much easier. And if that's really tricky, then hitchhike on an existing activity. So even if you have a shower every day, don't just have the water fall on your head, have it light from the Buddha. You know, set your motivation, dedicate the shower at the end. Then at least, you know, you're already doing it. So find a, you know, an activity that you can hitchhike on. And next week we're going to look at rebirth, what rebirth is. We're going to hopefully we'll be able to have the fours, the against, the undecided, a whole mix, because it is the basis of the Buddhist philosophy and it's not in our culture. So it's worth actually talking about it. So we'll get into some juicy stuff next week.